Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of Zed Games. From the Zed Game Studio, joining me for this episode, our indie game special, Razor, Jody, welcome.
Hello. Hi, Lee.
Hey.
Razor, what are we talking about on this episode?
As you mentioned, Lee, at the Indie Game Super Spectacular, we've got interviews with developers Brawsome and The Binary Mill, and Jody's going to be reviewing a game called Gone Home. First, let's kick this episode off with the news. Mr. Jody McGregor, are you prepared to read it?
Sure am.
This is Zed Games News, bringing you gaming news headlines from Australia and around the world.
Nintendo has unveiled a brand new version of the popular 3DS handheld console. The unexpected announcement revealed that the new model will be called the 2DS. It will not feature the clamshell design of the 3DS and the 3DS XL. Instead, it will feature a slightly angled slate design with the two screens on the same surface. The 2DS will also not include the 3D feature. The 2DS is scheduled for release in Australia on the 12th of October this year and will cost $149.95.
Can I tell you something about the release of the 2DS? When I got the press release, I awoke to that press release and I had assumed that someone's April Fool's Day prank had misfired by a couple of months.
Yeah, I think that was a common misconception.
Yeah because there really was an April Fool's joke. Someone actually did make this as a serious April Fool's joke, several years ago, when the 3DS first came out.
Right.
And somebody dug it up recently and posted it on the internet, and it's kind of hilarious.
Oh my God, yeah.
When you realized that it wasn't a joke,
and
it's a real thing, what were your thoughts then?
I like the idea of a more affordable 3DS. But I kind of, even though by this stage everyone is sliding the 3D setting down to nothing so that they can...
Everyone but me.
Well, okay. All right. You are the one guy who seems to be immune to the headache that the 3DS causes.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't bother me.
Man, we should get a CAT scan or something on your head to see.
I think I'm just the only person who plays video games and has 20/20 vision, like, left in the entire world.
Okay. So if I want to get a 3DS, and I do, I still want to have the 3D, because all of the games that I am interested in are ones that at least use that aesthetically in an interesting way. So for me, this kind of... Who is this for?
It's for kids.
Okay. Yeah, you got it.
It's very bulky in its design and very safety conscious, because a 3DS is a bit fragile, being a hinged thing. Like, you could quite easily break it if you just pushed on it too hard. Whereas, like, this thing looks like it's made out of Duplo. You could throw it around the room. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I like that sort of as an aesthetic choice for what's clearly being marketed as a toy for kids. It looks like a toy for kids, and it looks like one that they wouldn't break.
Right. Actually, that's really interesting. Mm.
Additionally, I don't know if I want to keep talking about it, but I will. You know, Nintendo's naming policy is a bit whack. We follow this stuff because, you know, we do it for the show, but for people who are just kind of paying attention to the gaming world, you know, they would know the difference between a Wii and a Wii U, a 2DS, a 3DS, a 3DS XL, a DS Lite, etc., etc. Like, they don't have a sequential naming policy, and I think it's confusing.
I feel like if we start pulling on this thread, the entire industry is going to unravel.
Yeah, Microsoft is just going to collapse.
Yeah. So I think that, yes, they do have funny names that make no sense, but welcome to the tech industry. Nothing has a sensible name anywhere, and it never will.
Eurogamer has reported that Sony intends to launch a virtual reality headset for the upcoming PlayStation 4 console. The device was reportedly supposed to be shown at the Gamescom Expo last week, but the presentation was scrapped at the last minute. Early information suggests that the technology is similar to that of the Oculus Rift, which was crowdfunded late last year. No definite release date for either device has been given.
There was a photo going around attached to this article.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it looked like Cyclops' awesome visor in white, yeah. Right?
I thought it looked like the Apple version of the Oculus Rift. White, it's sleek.
Yeah. Yeah, the Oculus Rift is a very chunky device that looks like it had crowdfunding in order to work.
Yeah, it looks like something engineers would love.
Yes, yes. And it is a wonderful, wonderful tool that I wish I was wearing right now, but I'm not. The Sony one, though, looks super sleek.
Yeah, it does look a lot sleeker and more modern, less like a box that you wear on your head.
Yes.
Yeah, which is cool. I think this is it's good news for people who are interested in the mainstream adoption of virtual reality technology. Mm-hmm. Possibly bad news for the good people at Oculus who crowdfunded their Oculus Rift to much success last year. You know, having a big company put out a very similar thing to what they're doing, it's probably going to be really bad for them.
Yeah, not necessarily though, because I mean, this is Sony who are doing it just for the PS4. Oculus Rift is a PC primarily device. I think people are going to see what Sony have got. If they don't have a PlayStation 4, they're going to get the thing that they know will work with, you know, what they've got. Oculus Rift was never going to be a big name brand. It's always going to be something for the enthusiasts. And if anything, it's just going to mean that more games are going to be released with native support for this kind of 3D. So,
and I guess it also does mean that, you know, someone at a corporation thinks that this is a viable idea.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I think it would be more worrying, not for the Oculus Rift people, but for Microsoft.
Ah, well, considering the way that they've been operating with the Xbox One, I expect we'll see some kind of announcement for it next week.
Yeah.
And they will say that it has always secretly been part of their plan, and they've just been testing the waters with 2D displays until this point. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to that one.
On the subject of the Xbox One will have limited voice recognition functionality when the console launches in Australia in November. Full voice commands will only be available in select countries like the US, the UK, and Germany. This creates a trend. The original Kinect device for the Xbox 360 was launched in 2010, with Australians having to wait over a year for voice features.
That's it for the news. Jody is up next with a review of Gone Home. Jody, you've been playing an indie title called Gone Home.
Yeah, I have.
What's that all about?
It's a PC game about a very down-to-earth subject. You play an ordinary young woman in your early 20s who has been away in Europe for like a year, backpacking around, and then you've returned to your family home in Portland, Oregon, but they've moved while you were away, so you've come back to a new house where they live, and when you get there, nobody is home. So the entire game is this one very sort of specific thing of exploring this house that's both familiar and weird at the same time, trying to figure out where everybody's gone and what's happened to your family. And that's it. That's the entire game, is just exploring this one big weird old house in the middle of a thunderstorm. And that's it.
Cool.
So it's a narrow focus.
Yeah, and because of that narrow focus, it's extremely detailed in a lot of ways that games normally aren't. You can wander around this house and pick up and interact with a huge amount of things in ways that you normally can't. In a lot of games, you get used to seeing things and just knowing that they're scenery, whereas in this, like, every glass, mug, tissue box can be picked up and then, like, examined and rotated and then dumped somewhere else. You can interact with almost everything you see in the house. So because of its limited scope, it gains a lot more detail than games would normally have, which makes it very immersive in an interesting way, because the other thing about it is that it's set in 1995 and it evokes the 90s in a really impressive way. Like, as someone who remembers the 90s pretty well, this is really accurate in a lot of ways that I'd forgotten. I mean, like, yeah, they have, you know, old TVs and old music is played on, like, old cassettes. But even just the way that the TV room is full of VHS tapes, which have, like, two random mismatched movies that have been taped obviously off TV back to back to fill a 4-hour tape. I used to have so many of those, and I'd just forgotten about that until I saw, like, the, you know, The Godfather Part 2 and Labyrinth were on the same tape in this person's house.
So does the 90s thing have any relation to the plot, or is that just something whack, like the fact that Donnie Darko was set in 1988?
Well, no, it is important to a lot of the specifics of one part of the plot, because as well as the mystery of where your family have gone, there's also this other, these other mysteries of what your family has done in the time that you've been gone. It's like you're slowly unraveling all of these separate stories about your mother, your father, and your younger sister. And your younger sister is especially focused on, and she's going through a very 1990s thing of discovering Riot Girl music.
Oh, yay.
Because she's about 16,
yep.
And your family's just moved, so she's at a new high school, and she's going through a lot of changes in her life, and she's getting into, like, making zines.
I was about to ask her whether there were zines.
There is a very sort of spooky atmosphere to it. Like, there's a huge storm going on, there's weather warnings on the TV, and there's lightning outside that, you know, crashes at very specific moments to startle you.
So how else does it maintain that atmosphere then? Because it is just you alone in a house, right?
Yeah, and it really plays to that loneliness, mm-hmm. which gives it a lot of its atmosphere as well. It just has that that creepy vibe of exploring a place in semi-darkness and not knowing exactly where things are. Like, as you go through the house, you turn on more and more of the lights, and I was just, like, leaving them on because I didn't want to, you know, that I was marking where I've been so I don't get lost, and also I just didn't want to be alone in the dark anymore.
Right.
Can you rearrange the rooms as you see fit?
No, you can't rearrange the books on the shelves, and large items of furniture can't be moved around. Like, I mean, you can turn the TV on or off, but you can't pick it up and lug it around. It's only smaller objects you can just make an absolute mess with.
The story is told through the items that are left around the house. Is that right, Jody?
Yeah, that's right. You find a lot of documents, a lot of letters from the characters. You even find your own postcards from your trip to Europe scattered around the house. And because your father is a writer, and your younger sister is sort of following in his footsteps a little bit and is like this talented, you know, good at English kid, that's the excuse for why they write down everything. Like, the okay. house is just full yeah. of notes that they've written each other and every single possible thing they could write down. Anything you could find an excuse to put in a game because somebody might write it down, yeah. they have written it down. That's, every room has something to read in it.
That's basically a pretty good justification. I think the first time that that has ever been done for games where most story is delivered these days by picking up people's notes or inexplicable
voice recordings.
Yeah.
There aren't any. Is there, like, there's an answering machine or something, right?
There is an answering yeah. machine. Yes, there is. Yeah.
So can you tell us about the story without spoiling too much? Is that possible?
Yeah, I can, especially one aspect of the story, because it's one of the main aspects and something that you figure out pretty quickly. A lot of what goes on is about discovering your younger sister Sam's story and what she's been up to, because she's had this really tumultuous year while you've been gone. She hasn't had her big sister around to explain all of this stuff through her, and she's in the middle of puberty, and she's gone through a kind of a sexual awakening and has discovered that she's in love with a girl. And that is where a lot of the story's sort of emotional heft comes from. Like, even before she's realized this stuff in, like, her diary entries and her notes, you pick up pretty quickly, oh, you're about to discover some things about yourself, Sam. And obviously this causes trouble for her in school and with her family. And so the unraveling story of, like, her infatuation for her friend and this sort of, is it going to work out or isn't it, is this really nice counterpoint to, like, the spooky atmosphere of an empty house. Because Sam is the one character in the game whose voice you hear a lot. When you find certain items, you hear her diary entries being read out. And the voice actor who does this 16-year-old girl really nails it and really comes across as sort of like a likable, precocious, intelligent before her time teenager. And even though she's a smart kid, she's obviously not ready to deal with the issues she's going to have to deal with.
Because you're free to roam around this house however you like, and you can pick up different elements. Like, how well does the storytelling work in a kind of linear fashion? Do you have to make sense of the order of these things yourself, or is it structured in a way where you're only finding, you know, the next part of the story, the next journal entry? How does that work?
There are areas that you can't get to straight away. There are locked rooms and parts of the house. You got to get the key.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so they do structure it that way to stop you from getting too much at once.
Right.
You slowly unlock more and more of the house as you find things, and there are puzzles that you need to solve, but sensible ones, not just like crazy ones. You actually, like, there are reasons why this part of the house would be locked.
So there's no, like, chance to be eaten by a Gru or anything then?
Well, I wouldn't want to, you know, give away the Gru twist. Right.
Do you think this could appeal to voyeurs or people that like rummaging through other people's stuff?
It does feel really voyeuristic. Like, you've got an excuse to be doing it, but you are at one point actually like rummaging through somebody else's underwear drawer and going, this is a bit odd. What it reminded me of was the Thief games more than anything, which is a weird thing to be reminded of, but yeah. I definitely think it was an influence because of the way that this works. In the Thief games, when you're not, you know, breaking into buildings and sneaking past guards, you are just rummaging through people's stuff looking for valuables.
Right.
But at the same time, the Thief games had a lot of, you know, maps you could find and documents, and you would actually learn a lot about the people you were robbing.
Right. So did you find any valuables in the home in Gord Home?
No, just a lot of, you know, videotapes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Tissue box is not really worth anything. Damn but it definitely gave me the exact same feeling of, like, instead of looking for, you know, where do they keep the money, I was looking for where do they keep the documents that are going to explain the next part of this story. Where's the next diary?
Right. Well, I mean, this was built by the team that did the reasonably well-received Minerva's Den expansion for Bioshock 2, which was apparently actually one of the best things about Bioshock 2 was this particular narrative-rich expansion. So probably knowing, you know, that game's heritage, you know, there are people who may have even, you know, worked on Thief originally, and hence that's why there's that through line there. It's a really interesting thing that they've shaved off all of the exciting gameplay and just left the looking and picking up things and reading notes, and yet that's made a really compelling game.
Yeah, it is a really different sort of game, you know? Like, I've never really heard of this sort of rummaging through someone's house kind of game.
It's different, yeah.
It's different. So how is it? Like, is it good?
Yeah, it is good. I did especially enjoy that aspect of it where you're following somebody else's story, even though, you know, Katie, the main character, this 22-year-old young woman, is the protagonist. It's somebody else's story that you're learning, and it feels like you're kind of the audience in a way. You're not really the main character. You're the secondary character who is watching somebody else's story unfold, which was really interesting. But there were a couple of moments that didn't work. It is sort of this TV movie family drama, and those things sometimes are a little bit predictable, and some of the twists in the story I could see coming a little bit too far away. And there are moments where you know what kind of emotion the game is trying to make you feel, and if that works, then it can work really well. But when it doesn't work and you know what you're supposed to be feeling but you're not feeling it, you just feel like you're being pushed into having a kind of emotional connection, and sometimes it's not there. When it is, it works really well, though.
We're talking about Gone Home for the PC. Jody, where can we get this game if we want it?
You can get it direct from the Fulbright company, the developers, from their website or from Steam. It is $20, which for a game you will probably finish in 3, maybe 4 hours. Like, if you think about games in terms of dollars per minute, that's not great value. But if you think about games in sensible ways, maybe it is.
You're listening to Zed Games, heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
You're listening to Zed Games. Next up, we're going to be hearing a pair of interviews. The Zed Games crew went down to Melbourne for PAX in July. Had a great time. While we were down there, we interviewed some independent developers. That seemed to be a huge focus of the exhibition. So we have for you the interviews. First one is Ben McDonald from Binary Mill. And the second one is Andrew Golding from Brawsome. I'm here with Ben McDonald of the Binary Mill. They're a Gold Coast-based developer, most well-known for Gun Club 2.
It's been one of our flagship titles, but yeah, we're moving on and going to bigger things like Minimoto and the soon-to-be-released Gun Club 3.
Yep. So Gun Club 3 comes out later this year. Can you tell us what to expect?
Yeah, basically what we're trying to do is just make the most advanced weapon simulator you can get, and we're trying to get rid of the, you know, pulling statistics out of the air and really just making weapons work as they actually do. And what we wanted to do is actually just make it so versatile that you can actually customize the weapon exactly how you want to do it, and then when you've got it exactly how you want it, take it to the range, try it out, see the effects of what you've been doing, and basically you'll be competing in events and challenging your friends, and you win prize money.
For people who have played Gun Club 2, what is new for Gun Club 3?
So we've retained nearly everything plus more about Gun Club 2, so the simulation and the upgrading's all there, but what it does is actually give them, you know, a chance to actually use that weapon. And before, Gun Club 2 was more just of a novelty simulation sort of thing, whereas this is actually, you know, it delves into the real side of it, where you actually get to fire the weapon and see what it does.
Actually, what it most reminds me of is those, you know, sort of high-end driving simulators, racing simulators, where you get the car that you personally can never have, and you can modify every single little bit.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of it, I think, because we have such restrictions on weapons here that, you know, it's sort of a way that people can get, you know, the weapons that they want to know about, and they've played it in other games, and they really want to see what they do and how to use it, and that's what Gun Club provides as well.
What platforms are you going to be releasing on?
We're coming up first on Android, and then we'll be following about 2 weeks later on iOS. And later on, we'll be looking at maybe a PC and maybe PlayStation and on the other consoles like Xbox, XBLA.
So for our listeners who want to find out more about Binary Mill, where do they go?
Yep, you can just go straight to thebinarymill.com, or you can go to Gun Club Armory on Facebook.
Ben, thank you very much for speaking with Zed Games today.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks, guys.
You are listening to Zed Games, heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
We're here at PAX Day 2, and I'm speaking with Andrew Golding from Brawsome Studios. Andrew, can you tell us about your latest game?
The latest game is MacGuffin's Curse, and it's a werewolf comedy puzzle adventure. It features top-down puzzle, like Zelda-style puzzle dungeons with full adventure-style story and quest system. There's about 180 rooms, there's about 16 characters you can talk to, and 50,000 lines of dialogue. It won an award for Best Game Writing at Free Play in 2011, and it's out now for PC, Mac, iPhone, and iPad.
I noticed that the art style was, it was just really awesome. Can you tell us about the artists and the cutscenes?
And all our cutscenes are told by these really cool comics that we had done by a local artist by the name of Matt Martin. And he's traditionally a portrait artist, but he's done a lot of game work sort of before on the side. He worked a little bit on my previous game, Jolly Rover, and came to me just asking if he could do something really cool for me for MacGuffin's Curse.
For a puzzle game, you've really got a lot of additional elements in there. You've got an overworld map, you have there are apartments that you can sort of manage. Like, are you finding that people are, you know, responding to that, or is that causing some difficulty for the audience to grasp?
I honestly think it's a bit intimidating. I think it's in some respects too big a game. We tried to put so much stuff in. We might have been better just keeping it a little bit more simple. You know, I guess it's one of these things where you have a bunch of ideas and you're like, oh, how can we make that work in the game? Whereas if the game was maybe a little bit more pure, you know, we might have been able to get a bigger audience. But some people really appreciate, like, even if they don't see all of the game, they appreciate that they can do all this stuff. And I don't think a game having too much stuff has ever been a problem for something like Skyrim. Yeah. You're never going to make a game that everybody enjoys. And I'm really coming to realize that and not worry about it so much. You make a game for the people that are going to love this kind of game.
It does seem a shame that people might be intimidated, because you really have put... The elements that are in there are really well polished and well developed, so it's not... I don't think that the design has, you know, was imperiled by that inclusion. So it's nice to see, and I hope that more people do realize how rich an experience you've crafted for them.
What we're trying to do at PAX is just try to get more people to play the game, because I think it's a game that you really have to sit down with for 10 to 15 minutes before you actually understand what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's really hard to convey what it's all about in a 90-second trailer, or, you know, especially competing in the Steam Summer Sale. I should do a little plug, because it's got Steam trading cards as well that just released today, so that's a new cool thing. And we were doing a bit of free DLC for a while. I don't know why, making the game bigger, like it needs to be more than 12 hours of gameplay.
If people are interested in Jolly Rover or MacGuffin's Curse, where can they pick it up?
Well, you can come direct to the site and you can get Humble Store keys, which gets you a Steam key and Ethereum free download. Or if you like, you can just buy them direct through Steam. You can also go to Desura and pick them up there. So there's Ethereum free and Steam options, and that'll give you PC Mac versions of the game. For MacGuffin's Curse, you can also go get them on the App Store. You can get a universal app for iPad and iPhone.
Andrew, thank you very much for speaking with Zed Games today.
No worries, thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. This has been Zed Games, recorded live in Brisbane on 4ZZZ and heard nationally thanks to the Community Radio Network. For more information on the show and to join the Zed Games community, head to our website, zgamesau.net. That's spelt Z-E-D, or send us an email at contact@zgamesau.net. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Zed Games is produced with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation.